Okay. So Rem, are you recording? Okay, great. So today is December 15th, and this is a public hearing for the Guam Cancer Trust Fund review of the new rules and regulations. And so first off, Dr. Thomas Kreis, the president of the University of Guam, is going to speak and give an introduction.
Thank you, Dr. Leon Guerrero, and buenas and half a day to everyone attending this public hearing on the Guam Cancer Trust Fund revised rules and regulations. As everyone here probably knows, the trust fund was a special fund created by Public Law 30-80 10 years ago in 2010. And the purpose of the GCTF is to provide financial assistance to organizations that provide patient-directed services for the prevention of cancers, its treatment, diagnosis, and other services that may be required to access treatment, including but not limited to off-island transportation and temporary housing. Additionally, up to 10% of available funds are used for cancer education and outreach programs, and that's according to Public Law 32-216. The purpose of today's public hearing is to obtain public comments and testimony on the proposed revised Guam Cancer Trust Fund rules and regulations. The original rules and regulations were completed and submitted to the Guam Legislature on October 26, 2010. We have been urged by both members of the legislature, the Office of the Public Auditor, members of the Guam Comprehensive Cancer Coalition, and other concerned citizens to update the GCTF rules and regulations so that they're up to date, in compliance, and understandable. So many of the revisions and additions to these rules and regulations being presented today are at the recommendation of the Office of the Public Auditor, who published their audit of the GCTF in December 2019. So now I'll turn it over to Dr. Leon Guerrero, who can walk us through the proposed new rules and regulations. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Dr. Kreis. Half a day, everybody. Many of the changes that were made to the rules and regs were to try to get some of the policies in line with the updated public laws, but a lot of it had to do with recommendations from the OPA. Last year, the OPA did an extensive audit of the Guam Cancer Trust Fund, and we were involved in several conversations with them, face-to-face conversations, but also some of the recommendations made it also into the audit report. So, for example, some things like the OPA suggested that we no longer allow for the 20% upfront fee, the startup fee, and change the fund distribution to reimbursement only. And the exception would be granted for only for new grantees. So for those grantees who had never gotten funding from the Guam Cancer Trust Fund. The OPA also suggested that we add to the rules and regs a requirement regarding salaries. For example, if an applicant organization is claiming personnel salaries, then they should give an explanation, like a detailed job descriptions to justify that this employee is providing direct help or direct services to cancer patients. For example, a patient navigator or a driver or nurses. The OPA also suggested that we consider deleting the April call for proposals to simplify the finances and just have only one call per year right at the beginning of the fiscal year. The OPA also recommended strengthening the review and approval of the grant applications because there was some ambiguity there wasn't very good record keeping and good rubrics, so we strengthened that. The OPA also recommended better monitoring of submission of reports by grantees, so we strengthened those requirements. And then the OPA also suggested putting caps on the grant funding amounts that go towards salaries. And so we put, abided by that recommendation also. So just those are some highlights, but there's quite a few changes that we made, and I'm sure we sent for all of those of you who are here today, we sent out a copy of the revised rules and regs. So you've had a chance to look through it. And just to give you just a real brief history of the timeline, we started revising the rules and regs back in November of 2019, where we came up with a first draft. in January of 2020. I presented a second draft to the council. And then between April 8th and May 28th, the council members were meeting on an almost weekly basis through Anyways, we were meeting weekly, going through the rules and regs line by line and making revisions. Then this draft was sent to our UOG legal counsel, Anthony Camacho, who's with us today. And then he went through the rules and regs line by line for many hours, ensuring the legality of the document and making some changes so that it was in line with legal requirements. He sent his revisions back to the Guam Cancer Trust Fund Council in June 29th. And then we spent another month and a half going back through those revisions, maybe sometimes simplifying the language and just going through reformatting. So finally on August 20th, the rules and regs, the revised rules and regs were approved by the council during our monthly meeting. And then that's how we are here today, and we're able to move forward with a consideration at a public hearing. So I just wanna, so again, this is just a public hearing to obtain your comments and testimony. We're very happy if you've provided written testimony so that it's already written down. And we would like to give everybody an opportunity to make a comment or to hear your suggestions, anything you have to make the document better. We would ask that you limit your comments to 5 minutes. After 5 minutes, if you exceed that time frame, we'll probably put you on mute. So just warning you, but we want to give everybody a chance to make their statement. And you know, we're not here to debate. We're just here to hear what you have to say. And we will take all of your comments under advisement and go back to the council and see what we can do with the comments to make the document better. So, okay, I have received 2 written testimonies so far. I don't know if we should do those first. I don't know, it's the standard procedure.
We can just state for the record who they were from, and that we will be taking their comments under advisement as well.
Okay. Thank you very much, Mr. Camacho. So one written testimony that was provided by Renata Bordalio from the from the Guam Cancer Registry. She was basically in favor of the rules and regulations, and she just had some questions. One of the issues that she brought up that I thought I might mention here that we hadn't even considered was that there was a law. I'm sorry. I'll just leave it at that, and we can maybe bring it up later. And then the other written testimony that was submitted was by, from Ellie, from Ellie Ongrong from Guam Cancer Care. So those were the 2 written testimonies that were submitted. Ellie, I believe, is here. I would like to give you the opportunity if you want to summarize your written testimony since you are here.
Hi, Dr. Leon Guerrero. Hi, everybody. Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of our organization.
I'm sorry, for the purpose of record keeping, can you just state your name?
Oh, sure. Sorry. My name is Ellie Ongren. I am the program director of Guam Cancer Care, and I oversee the direct services.
May we ask her to turn on her video, please, for the purpose of the recording?
Oh, yes. Yes, please. When you're going to testify, please turn on your video. Thank you.
Sorry. Hi. So one of our, me being the lead for our direct services, I think one of the most pressing or most pressing issue that we had with the rules and regs is on the personnel side. A lot of people don't understand what us navigators actually do and what our return on investment is for every dollar that we spend of grant funds. So a major service that we provide is the coordination and bridging of treatment. So the main service that all the oncologists look to us navigators for are the oncology drugs. So whether it be an oral chemotherapy or whether it be an infusion chemotherapy. So a bulk of our time is spent on that service. Although we understand the revising of the rules and regs is to make everything much more stricter and much more transparent, we feel that our value as navigators is worth what we do on behalf of our cancer warriors here on Guam. So that was one of the major comments that we did provide a written testimony on. So if you can take into consideration the return on investment of what our direct services staff do for every dollar spent of grant funds, how much we actually bring in value.
Okay, thank you. You have anything else you want to add?
Sorry, and there was one other thing after I had submitted the rest of the written testimony. I don't remember this being in the old rules and reg, and this is one of the topics that we as a staff always have a back and forth conversation about. In item number two. Definitions under treatment. So one of the back and forths that we have here as a staff is treating other comorbidities in order to treat cancer. So we always prioritize the actual cancer treatment delivery over a prerequisite of that cancer treatment delivery. So our question is, in the makeup of the council, yes, we do see the nurse or nurse practitioner that has expertise in cancer care, but is a medical director down the line going to be part of the council to oversee and to quantify that those are eligible services that would be funded through the trust?
I'm sorry, could you repeat the last thing you said? You're talking about the definition that was added or another definition? No.
I don't recall it being in the old rules and regs, but I'm not sure if you can correct me if this was an addition or not. But number three under treatment, treating other comorbidity conditions in order to treat cancer. Because this is one of those topics that we always have a back and forth in-house is, do we prioritize the CT scan that is needed before the third cycle of chemotherapy, or do we prioritize the payment of the third cycle of chemotherapy over the CT scan? So our question is, because it's going to be part of a covered expense under the trust, will there be, other than the nurse or nurse practitioner that will be part of the council, will there be a medical director to actually quantify those eligible expenses by treating those comorbidities prior to the actual cancer treatment? If that makes sense, sorry.
Ellie, so we didn't change the definition. The only definition we changed was we added education and outreach. I don't think there's a real simple answer for that because we didn't establish that to begin with. Sorry.
Okay. Yeah. That's, I wasn't sure if it was part of the old. I apologize because I didn't revert back to the old. But like I mentioned, that was one of those that we always have a back and forth in house because we're like, will this be qualified or will it not be qualified?
You were asking as to whether or not there was a medical type specialist on the board. I'm trying to. Yeah, you made some mention of that as well as the composition of the board.
My question specifically would be to make sure that treating comorbidity conditions prior to the in order to treat cancer, will there be a medical expert or a cancer expert that would quantify those expenses?
The quick answer is it would be the board that would, that's basically the procedure. Yeah. It would be the board quantifying the expenses or reviewing them. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. That was my only other comment. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Ellie. Appreciate it. Is there anybody else who would like to go next? Mr. Lawrence, Alan.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. My name is Lawrence Alam. I'm the program coordinator for the Guam Comprehensive Cancer Control Program and also part of the Guam Cancer Coalition. I've been reading the draft of the bylaws, and it's awesome. Thank you so much. This has been really a tremendous work on your team, Doc, and kudos to you and your team for putting the document together. I just have a few comments when reading the bylaws. So, and I'm just going to try to be as quick as I can. I think, for example, we need to differentiate between prevention and screening, because in public health lingo, there's this difference between primary prevention, between secondary prevention and tertiary prevention. So I think I know this is not a public health document, but at least it gives importance, I guess in my mind, a lot of importance to screening as well. Although in the document, it does provide that that importance, but at least it gives you that breakdown. Second, when I was looking over it, and I did it sequentially, right? So I feel that putting 10% on prevention activities is too small. I think the direction that we need to go is actually putting more funds on prevention activities. Although, everybody knows in this circle that the cost for treatment and cancer screenings are really expensive. But I think as a council, we need to start thinking about putting more funds in prevention activities. And I think that's very, 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 very important. And second, I think, and I don't know how much the council will get, there's numbers thrown here and there, but I think your 10% for admin cost, it's small too. So I think you have to think about, because at the end of the day, we're investing in your council, in your operations. And if you invest in really great people running your council, I think your council will fly. And that's based on our experience. I've been with this group for about 7 years already. And I think that's something to think about. And again, when you're separating education and outreach, I think those two fall under prevention. And I think you just, in my mind, that's how I'm looking at it. There's the prevention piece, then you got your screening pieces, and then you got your tertiary prevention activities, which is the treatment side, right? Another comment is way at the bottom, the council makeup, right? You're asking for licensed registered nurse or NPs. But I didn't see any verbiage there whether these nurses have to be an expert in cancer or something like that. Is that something that you may want to put in there? Because when you're asking for nonprofits to participate or apply for this grant, you know, you're putting words where they have to be cancer experts. I forget where it was, but I guess in my mind, when we're seeking for members for the council with expertise in cancer prevention and control be important? And I think that's really basically my comments so far. I have a few more comments, but I'll listen into your other discussions. Thank you so much.
Yeah, I just want to briefly touch on that. So one of the sections talks about who is, you know, who the board or what the, you know, what the board is composed of. And you are right, there is a provision talking about a nurse or a nurse practitioner, okay? Has to be licensed, but not necessarily in cancer care. Further, there's going to be a representative from UOG's School of Allied Health, you know, so you could have somebody there who knows something about cancer care. And then finally, someone could be recommended by a board member in the community, and that could also be a cancer type specialist. So there are opportunities. It's not mentioned specifically that we require cancer or people directly involved in cancer. And also be advised that let's say that I was a doctor and I specialized in cancer. I might have a conflict of interest if I'm trying to, you know, have my firm, you know, obtain one of these grants and then simultaneously be a member of the board. But there are also essentially provisions in this which try to prevent such conflicts from occurring. But just to answer your question specifically, there are opportunities to put people with experience in cancer care prevention on the board, but it's not specifically mentioned. I hope that helps you. Thanks.
Sure. Lawrence, thank you so much for your comments and for your support. And I really liked your comment about giving UOG more than 10% for admin fee, because it really does cost a lot. You know, and actually, Public Law 36-116 changed UOG's admin fee from 10% down to 5%. Making it even more difficult for us to keep going. So that's kind of unfortunate. And I just wanted to also say that, I agree with you that it would be nice if we could have more of the funding go towards prevention and outreach. Unfortunately, it's not up to the council, because that's that was determined by Public Law 32216. Where they added education and outreach. That was back in 2014. That is correct. They allow up to 10%, but it's not up to us. So we just have to follow the law. And unless somebody can get out there for changing the percentages, we're just carrying it out. But those are, you had really good comments, and I appreciate your support.
And I want to echo that, you know, that we need to invest in an awesome infrastructure so that we can move processes forward, especially with how the Cancer Council can move forward and really work on selecting the most awesome, the best applications that are being submitted, and at the same time possibly even working with the community and urging folks to apply for Guam Cancer Trust Fund funding, because there's a lot of people out there that have very great ideas but are afraid to apply for these trust fund funds. And I guess that's where I'm coming from in terms of looking at the policies that you wrote. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Anybody else would like to comment? Or provide testimony? Okay. Well, I guess what I could do is, since we have time, I could go back to what Renata Bordaglio had said and just share some of her comments. Um, Oops, okay. From Renata Bordaglio, she said, I've read the rules and regs and I support its adoption. I'm not representing the Guam Cancer Registry, although my work at Guam Cancer Registry informs my views. I remember early on in the process of revising these rules and regs, Kathy Castro, the Comp Cancer Chair, mentioned to me that all trust fund awardees should be reporting to the Guam Cancer Registry. I agreed, although it hasn't always been the case that awardees do report to Guam Cancer Registry. For our part, Guam Cancer Registry, although we've sent reminder notices to such agencies, has not really followed up to ensure that all such required entities do report. My question, does the following part of the revised rules and regs, number 15, cover mandatory reporting to Guam Cancer Registry? And wouldn't it be better to more explicitly note it? So we state, I believe, in section 14 that that all awardees must be in compliance with the, I'm sorry, they must be in compliance with the local laws. And I guess she's bringing up the fact that one of the laws is that all entities dealing with cancer patients are required to report to the Guam Cancer Registry on a quarterly basis the cancer patients that they deal with. And I think that there are a few entities that do receive cancer trust fund monies that regularly report to the Guam Cancer Registry, but there are a few that don't. And so I followed up with her and she was basically asking if we can also make it more clear in our rules and regs that those awardees who are receiving Guam Cancer Trust Fund monies, that they comply with the law and be required to report as is required by law, report cancer patients to the Guam Cancer Registry in the same way that Guam Memorial Hospital, Guam, you know, Regional Medical Center, all the clinics and all of the other clinics on island, they report their cancer cases to the Guam Cancer Registry, but I guess there's a few that don't. There's a few of our organizations that have been receiving funding. So she was asking if that's something that we would consider putting in our rules and regs. So we will take that under advisement and maybe confer with our UOG legal counsel to make sure that that's legal. Any other comments or questions? I know we have a few people here who, we have somebody representing Senator Teresa's office. I don't know, Natasha, if you want to say something.
Hi, sorry, I have no comment at this time.
Okay, thank you. So if there's no other testimony, I could ask, I think Dave or our legal counsel, are we allowed to adjourn or do we need to stay?
Yeah, if there's no further testimony, of course, we are gonna take all the comments and all the written testimony under advisement and in accordance with the Administrative Adjudication Act, what we're gonna do as well is we're going to package this. Now this isn't the end of it, so. We still have to go back to the board and they have to look at the comments. And so if we're gonna make an amendment to any of the amendments, so to speak, or add new amendments, we literally would have to have another public hearing. So this might not be the end of it, but the end product, whatever it is, whether it be now or after another public hearing, we have to package it all up and we have to submit it to the legislative secretary or basically, you know, file it with the legislature and it'll be a transcript of the public hearing, so on and so forth, as well as kind of the transmittal letter description of the actions we took to get to that point. So don't think this is it. It might not be because we might be right back here if the council so decides, the trust fund so decides to, like I said, change any of the amendments. They might based on the written testimony and the comments made here, but Other than that, I just want to thank you all for participating in the formulation of these amendments to these rules. Thank you.
Okay, then. Well, since there's no other comments, or is there, I'll give everybody one more chance. Any comments? If not,
Just to confirm the protocol, and so General Counsel can weigh in on it, on my comment, because this was advertised from 2 to 4 p.m., I think there may be an obligation to stay online until then, because some people may not be available until 3 or 3:30, and afford them the opportunity for the open testimonial time frame. Please confirm.
Well, we could do that. We could make ourselves available. I know that even when the legislature kind of does a public hearing, it's kind of over after the last person has their say. But we could do that if you want. We could go one step further to accommodate the public and try to seek more commentary. Someone would just, you know, kind of stay online and wait, but that could be it.
Well, usually at the legislature, when mm-hmm. a situation like this happens, I've been in public hearings that were scheduled from 1 to 5, and 30 minutes in, with me as the only person testifying, they close the public hearing, but they make an announcement that anybody who wishes to can submit written testimony for 10 working days after this period of time.
Yeah, but that's a different set of rules. We're going under the Administrative Adjudication Act, so we just simply have a public hearing. And we're just debating as to whether or not we want to go one step further from the legislature. And, you know, if it says, you know, because I know that typically you show up for the public hearing. If you come late and it's over. But in the Zoom world of the pandemic emergency, just as, you know, we could do that. Someone would just have to monitor or remain hosting the site. Dave, if you want to do that, or somebody wants to do that, if they wanted, because this is being recorded. And if we wanted to take the testimony, we could, okay. Or we could just close now, because pretty much I think everybody that was going to attend the hearing has. I'll leave that up to the administrators. We could go either way on this one, really.
Okay, and so if there is an option, then I would err to the side of how Ken had described it, to give those that may not be available because we may be ending earlier, to afford them the opportunity to provide a written testimony, because we're done, basically.
Okay.
I don't know if anybody knows of anyone who may be coming in later because of their commitments to other things or not. Could be a factor.
I know that there were several senators who wanted to attend and who were planning to attend, but because of the emergency session that was called today at 2, they weren't able to join, but I don't think that they're going to be getting out anytime soon. So I wouldn't mind keeping my Zoom on until 4 o'clock, but I doubt that they would get out before that to join. So,
so just to clarify, was it just to join or was it to provide some kind of a testimony, to your knowledge?
To mine, I don't know what they just express an interest of, oh yeah, I want to join, but there was no, to my knowledge, there was no testimony that they were going to give.
What if clarification, if we were to proceed with Ken's recommendation, how do we get the information out to the community that they have extra time? I think it was 10 days that you mentioned to submit any written testimony.
That's the legislative rules. We're not following those. We're just supposed to, you know, we're following the Administrative Adjudication Act, which just requires a public hearing. This is the public hearing where we solicit comments from the public. You have the right to comment. Okay. And the debate was whether or not we were going to, we have another hour and 20 minutes, in the time block 2 to 4 p.m. when this was scheduled. We might, like I said, the administrators are debating whether or not they're just going to leave the Zoom link on. If anybody here heard anything and it just inspired you to write some written testimony. Okay. Definitely we can continue to take the written testimony till 4 p.m. Not an issue. I think they can email you, Rachel. Is that, well, yeah. So if you can give everybody, I guess your email. So if they wanted to, they could. Okay. And certainly we would consider any additional written testimony between now and 4 p.m. So that would not be an issue, I don't think.
Okay, yeah, I put my email in the chat. I think everybody knows it anyways, but just in case, anybody can send me an email or Remelin. I'm only too happy to accept testimony. Okay, with that, I'll go ahead and close. And I just want to say thank you again to everybody for being here. And I just want a special thank you to the council members who, you all have worked so hard over the past 8 months, even through COVID, Zoom meetings. And you just kept plugging along. And I really appreciate all of your hard work and couldn't have done it without you. That's for sure. So thank you. And thank you, Mr. President, for joining us. Really appreciate it. And for Mr. Camacho. And then that's it. So thank you so much. Have a great day. Enjoy and stay safe.
Thank you. See you later.
So Rachel, we can stop the recording, but if you have a minute afterwards, I would appreciate your time.
Okay. Ram, go ahead and I think you have to let me become the host again.